We're going to move away from the gamma ray sources, the E star gamma ray sources, and talk about magnetospheres of magnetic G stars. Our fourth speaker for the session is Matthew Schultz. And
okay, thanks. Hi, everyone. Thank you for sticking around until the penultimate talk of the conference. Today I'll be speaking about the centrifugal magnetospheres of magnetic B-type stars. This is coming out of my dissertation research, which I'm doing under the supervision of Greg Wade and Thomas Arrhenius, and in collaboration with Richard Townsend. So, of course, there are many different kinds of B stars that show emission, all originating in distinct physical environments around them. One of my main goals for today's talk is to give you the tools you need to easily distinguish the magnetosphere stars from the classical BE stars. So the magnetic mass of stars are a small but not insignificant proportion of the magnetic of the OB stars in general. As Greg Wade showed in his talk earlier, they make up about 10% of the early type stellar population. They're characterized by large, organized, strong magnetic fields to first order, dipolar, typically with the magnetic axis oblique at some angle to the rotational axis. They also, in many cases, have magnetospheres, which are detectable by one or more of the indirect diagnostics listed there. Today's talk will focus mostly on H-alpha emission and photometry. Stick around for Chris Vard's talk afterwards. He'll be discussing X-rays. And also, there's a poster by Asif Abdullah discussing X-rays as well. Magnetospheres arise because the radiatively driven wind is, of course, a plasma, which has to follow the magnetic field lines if they're present. So if the magnetic field is strong enough, in other words, if the magnetic energy density is greater than the kinetic energy density of the wind is given by the magnetic wind confinement parameter eta star, the plasma will flow along closed magnetic loops, collide at the loop tops, shock, producing X-rays, condense into a cool, dense disk of plasma, which then, in the absence of rotation, will just simply fall back to the surface of the star. From the eta star, the magnetic wind confinement parameter, we get the Alphen radius, which is just the maximum radius of closed magnetic loops, which you can see approximately there in that diagram. One of the consequences of magnetic confinement is that the plasma has to co-rotate with the star because it has to follow the magnetic field lines, which of course are moving with the photosphere. This means the further you go from the star, the faster the rotation simply increases linearly with distance. This means that the emission is found systematically at higher velocities. So here we have sigma Ori E, which is kind of the prototypical CM star. And notice the emission is found at about 2 to 3 times V sine I. I also want you to note that the emission is quite weak in this case. It's only about 20% above the continuum. So, and this is the strongest emission that we see in any CM star. An important concept is the Kepler radius. I think most of you are probably familiar with that. It's simply the radius at which the gravitational and centrifugal forces balance. In these stars, the emission, as you can see, this is the Kepler radius here, is always found outside of the Kepler radius, or at least peaks outside of that. So fine, you say, you have high velocity emission. Well, we see that in BP, in classical BE stars as well. The emission timescales, however, are quite different. Typically for the BE stars, it's over the course of months or years. CM stars, you see significant variability in the course of a few hours. And this is because their rotational periods are very short. For the stars that have emission, they range from 0.5 days to 1.5 days. In addition, all of the variability that we see, be it photometric, spectroscopic, X-ray, what have you, is synchronized to the rotational period. It follows the magnetic field, essentially. So here you have the longitudinal magnetic field measurements of the star. And here are the H-alpha equivalent widths. And you notice that the minima of the H-alpha equivalent widths correspond to the minima and maxima of the field, and the maxima of the equivalent widths correspond to the null points of the magnetic field. And you can see this also illustrated here in this dynamic spectrum of sigma Aurigae's H alpha line, where the maxima correspond to these emission maxima here, and the minima correspond to these occultation events that happen in the core of the line. And this arises due to the variable projection of the magnetosphere on the sky due to the obliquity of the magnetic field from the rotational axis, and of course the inclination of the rotational axis from the line of sight. So when the plasma is at quadrature phases, it's projected on either side of the star, and you get these high velocity emission bumps. But when the plasma is occulting the star, you get occultation events in the middle. And this also leads to an increase in, or a decrease in the light curve at those phases. And that photometric variability is not very strong. So again, this is the strongest photometric variability we see in any of the CM stars, and it's less than 0.1 magnitudes. And if you compare that to kind of a typical BE star, it's much, much weaker than that. I also want to point out that these lines here, relating to the various viscosity parameters during your dissipation phase, sort of indicate that with classical BE stars, we're already at the point where we're doing fairly detailed modeling of the dissipation of the plasma, of the circumstellar plasma. Whereas for CM stars, we don't even know exactly how it gets out of the magnetosphere. We know exactly how it gets in, as I explained during the magnetic wind confinement part of the talk, but the plasma leakage mechanism, we don't know. So here are three canonical scenarios. The first one at the top, dynamical equilibrium, obtains when there is essentially no rotational support, so a very slowly rotating star. So in that case, the plasma just falls back to the surface of the star at the same rate that it's being fed by the wind. And unless you have a very high mass loss rate, you're not going to see any emission. And in fact, we do see emission in some of those stars, but that would be the magnetic O stars. The next scenario, diffusive equilibrium, well, there are a variety of different processes that could give rise to this. One of the most obvious is ambipolar diffusion, where temporarily neutral particles are able to cross the magnetic field lines. And because, of course, due to the co-rotation of the plasma and the strong centrifugal force, this causes a centrifugal wind that allows the plasma to escape. Unfortunately, the ionization in these magnetospheres is so high that ambipolar diffusion can be ruled out on those grounds alone. The final case is centrifugal breakout. This is kind of what we've been working with for the last several years. So in this case, the plasma builds up and builds up and builds up until eventually the density is so high the magnetic field can no longer confine it. At that point, frozen flux still applies. And rather than the plasma following the magnetic field lines go where the plasma wants to go. And you have an explosive expulsion of plasma from the outer regions of the magnetosphere. So this is something that sort of makes intuitive sense and also pops right out of magnetohydrodynamic simulations that have been done. Unfortunately, it's never actually been observed. So that's the point of showing these photometric residuals here from the photometry on the last slide. There's essentially no variation over 20 rotational cycles that cannot be explained simply as instrumental noise or other systematic effects. Furthermore, when we actually fit the eclipse depths, the column density necessary to produce them gives a lower limit for the mass of the magnetosphere, which is about two orders of magnitude below the limiting mass that one would predict from a breakout scenario. So just to recall, these are kind of the signature differences between the classical BE stars and the magnetosphere stars. You know, obviously, I've oversimplified things to a certain degree. You know, BE stars do sometimes show short-term variability or periodic variability if you have asymmetries in the wind and rotational modulation. But by and large, this should allow you to distinguish a CM star from a BE star with a few closely spaced observations. So moving on to my own small part in this project, I'm conducting a population study, one of whose primary goals is to clarify the positions of all of the magnetic B stars on what we call the rotation confinement diagram. So we just have the Kepler radius, the Alphen radius for each star. And the idea is to have a firm empirical basis to infer the conditions under which you get emission or not in the magnetospheres of these stars. And this has actually changed a little bit from the most recently published version. You notice all of the red points corresponding to stars that have H alpha emission are now above this dashed line, which was not the case a year or so ago. Whereas in here, they're all in absorption. So this dashed line is the Alphen radius 10 times larger than the Kepler radius. The solid line is Ra equals Rk. Strictly speaking, all of these stars do have centrifugal magnetospheres, but they don't show emission. And why is that? We don't really know yet. Here are the stars in the sample with emission. The maximum emission profile is shown in blue, the maximum absorption in black, and a photospheric model profile shown in red. This is actually not all of the stars. Some more have been discovered. The most recent member of the family is ALS3694, and there is a poster outside you can see for a limited time only. And a couple of other stars that have recently been discovered by Eikenberry et al. Based on spectroscopic evidence, and we will soon be getting magnetic confirmation of one of those stars. So, if I take the difference between the maximum emission profile and the photospheric profile, I can measure the emission equivalent width. And if I regress this against the Alphen radius, the Kepler radius, and their ratio, not surprisingly, based on the rotation confinement diagram, there are sort of clear thresholds beneath which there is no emission. But above these thresholds, we don't see any kind of clear trend in the EH alpha equivalent widths. And this is kind of an interesting question. We really expected to see some kind of trend in at least one of these parameters. It could be a projection effect, because of course all of these stars have a different inclination angle and a different obliquity. And we'll be investigating this using the rigidly rotating magnetosphere model. A similar measurement can be done for ultraviolet lines. So these are composite equivalent widths from various resonance lines that are sensitive to the wind. And there's something more of a trend, but it's not so obvious. And of course, the same measurements can be done for H beta and H gamma. And if you take the ratios of H beta and H gamma and H alpha, these Balmer decrements are sensitive to the plasma density. So measuring this for the stars where the emission is actually strong enough all the way down to H gamma to actually perform such a measurement, it seems to be essentially constant for all of them. There's no obvious trend with the increasing magnetic confinement volume. And they're all sort of around 12.5, which is a bit reassuring because it's up here at a number density of 10 to 13.5 that it starts to become optically thick and that diagnostic does not work. Furthermore, the density predicted by a breakout scenario is a few orders of magnitude higher than this, which kind of agrees with the lower limits on the mass from the photometry being a couple of orders of magnitude lower than the breakout scenario. This rather scary looking plot here is the same kind of measurement, but velocity resolved. So instead of using equivalent widths, simply taking the ratio in each velocity bin. The red is the density itself. You can see it declines smoothly with increasing distance from the star. And we see this in essentially all of the stars that we can perform this measurement for. The violet line here is the model density, which again is much higher. So all of this kind of argues, it's kind of another piece of evidence that centrifugal breakout is not actually happening. So in conclusion, this is a small but growing subclass. About 25% of the magnetic B stars have emission, so it's about, I guess, 2.5% overall of the early type, or the B type population. And please keep your eyes peeled for them. If you see any in any surveys you happen to do, let us know, because we're always interested in adding more to this. And the rest of the conclusions are really of interest for people who study this. So on that note, I will take your questions. Oh no, we haven't detected one yet. We applied for CFHT time to get Espinal data for, I forget which one. That's actually not my project. That's James Sikora, that's right, yeah. It's Greg's new master's student who is leading that project, so.